KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's probably a natural thing that in 1994, Noah Wyle was asked to play a character named John Carter on ER, because in this current series, Falling Skies, he is an adventurer, but a family man. And it's good to have you here, Noah. Thanks so much for doing this.
It is such a pleasure to be here. This is a long time in coming. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. And one of the things I was just thinking about as we were talking before we got started, between ER and the Librarian series and now Falling Skies, you've so often played a guy who's kind of an audience surrogate. I mean, in ER, you introduce us to the hospital, and the Librarian, you're kind of our way into all these adventures. And as Tom Mason on Falling Skies, you were kind of explaining the world to us. And I wonder what attracts you to these kinds of characters.
I guess probably being raised on Jimmy Stewart movies and enjoying that kind of everyman character. And also, those are the roles I tend to get cast in, which also tends to inform your preference, oddly enough. I like characters that have a sense of nobility about them and a sense of morality, who are resistant to accepting large amounts of responsibility, but then in a moment of need or crisis, rise to the occasion. I have an affinity for those types of characters.
But these are also guys, too, who in a way tend to explain these situations to the audience. Have you noticed that? These are guys who get to do that.
That's true. And usually in the beginning of those character arcs, that's the other thing you look for, is John Carter didn't start off being a very proficient or knowledgeable doctor. He was the bumbling, stumbling intern on his first day of work. So I like looking at, okay, well, where everybody else in this hospital has to start off with a high level of proficiency, my character's arc is the largest, because eventually he's going to get good and the road he's going to travel will be the most interesting arc to play. So that's why I was attracted to that character. Similarly with the Librarian, the character Flynn Carson is a professional academic who has 22 college degrees but lives at home with his mother and has never kissed a girl and is basically a sheltered, socially backward individual who eventually will be the guy that's going to save the world from the clutches of evil. So, another good character arc. Tom Mason starts off as a history professor, father of three, married. The last guy you would expect to lead a rebel rebellion against an invading alien horde, perhaps. So again, wonderful arc of deconstructing an intellectual and creating a man of action, taking a guy who's studied the deeds of the founding fathers, and then he becomes a founding father.
But also this guy who's kind of a defender of old-fashioned sort of family values and is constantly caught between that. And I just was thinking about in the third season, was it at the episode Strange Brew, which is kind of one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, mine too.
Where he's thrown back into the past, and he has to ask himself if he'd rather have that kind of world not knowing and just sort of having his head in the clouds or in the books, if you prefer.
Yeah, that's a theme we've toyed with time and time. We had another episode where he comes across a family that's living sort of up in the hills that seems to be sort of immune from the invasion, and it's the other road less traveled that he flirts with the idea of. But again, you keep coming back to when there's immense need, these characters whose preference would be to take care of their family and stay away from large groups of people and tons of responsibility. Certain men just feel that call to arms and shoulder that mantle of responsibility easier than others, and Tom Mason's one of those guys.
I sort of think about that those sort of four R's that he enunciates in the pilot episode, starting with retreat to revenge.
Yeah.
And that's sort of,
I wrote that one.
Did you?
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
I like alliteration.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you, Noah.
I thought that, I don't know, there was something very specific about, you know, the methodology of that plan of attack, that they were going to retreat and they were going to regroup and then they were going to return and then they were going to get their revenge, that I thought set the table for what the entire series was going to be about. I just like the distillation of that phrase.
I feel too, like in this year, he seems to be really sort of detached from that. I mean, in the weird way, he's become this sort of action figure who, at the end of each of the episodes so far, seems to have this enormous amount of regret about what he's done.
Well, what we're trying to do is create a kind of a transference in the characters of Tom and Dan Weaver. You know, Colonel Weaver, when we met him, was the hardcore militarist. He was the by-the-book, non-sentimental, cold, rational thinking decision maker.
Who was constantly referring to his military experience, I guess you somehow didn't
constantly.
Know.
And Tom was the conscience. Tom was the one who was saying, you know, there's a larger context here to consider. And over the course of the episodes and the seasons, we've done a kind of a transference where he, in finding some of his family members and experiencing some loss, I'm referring to the character of Dan Weaver, now is a lot more human and a lot more, is filled with more self-doubt and second-guessing tendencies than Tom, who is becoming a little bit harder and a little bit more resolved in his thinking and is able to make the proverbial Sophie's choices again and again and again with greater ease.
But again, I like this thing you're doing where we get to see he sort of doesn't like that he's being pulled into this. And there is a sort of dawning sense of awareness that he's becoming that guy.
Yeah, he is. He is. And I think that he's always one foot in, one foot out. And then he finally fully commits to it. And then,
but he commits to it physically, I feel like, and not so much emotionally.
Totally. Totally.
I know you're a movie guy. Tell me if there are movies that you watch to sort of get ready for this, or if there's something you sort of use as a touchstone for each season for yourself.
I try to find different things to inspire each season more than each episode, and I try to sort of loop another character into that thinking. Will Patton, who plays Colonel Weaver, is a consummate professional and a very good friend and a total pro. And he and I talk a lot about our characters' relationships. In one season, we watched a lot of John Ford Westerns to try and look at the relationship that always existed between John Wayne and Ward Bond's character and how there was always an odd sense of feminine, masculine, mother-father leadership energy, the way that sometimes John Wayne would be the mother figure and Ward Bond would be the gruff father figure, and then other times it would switch. And we like the idea of playing that these two guys know that they need each other to be effective leaders. And they employ not situational ethics, but situational energy. And sometimes it's better if Tom's the soft, sensitive one, and other times it's better if Dan Weaver is. And that idea that we switch genders and switch roles was sort of attractive to both of us to flirt with. Last season, we kept watching the movie Beckett over and over again because this idea of a friendship turning into a betrayal or a friendship starting down one road and then becoming something else was the theme of last year. You know, Tom becomes the president, which reverses the power dynamic that has existed up until that point. Dan Weaver becomes the conscience or the conciliary, but is not the decision maker. And this idea that Dan has promoted Tom to this place of leadership and still in the confidence for him to be able to do it, maybe not fully aware of what type of leader Tom will be once he assumes that responsibility, was an interesting theme to explore. So yeah, I always watch movies or find books or songs, anything that you can throw into the hopper to sink your teeth into, I enjoy.
Because I figure that's got to be a big part of just figuring out ways for this to motivate, because it's been a dire situation for 4 years now. And to come up with things to sort of keep that juice going in the character, it's got to be key to the way you work it.
I find, well, this particular show, you know, this is a new experience for me. This is a new genre for me, and it's one that is not necessarily my go-to genre. So I have had to find things that make it interesting for me from the very beginning, either to not think of it in terms of being an alien invasion science fiction story, but I thought of it in terms of being a family drama in the context of an alien invasion story, or really being a war film in essence.
It really is like a World War II movie. It's almost like they were expendable.
It really is. It really is. And there's aspects of it that have become that touch on the Western genre as well. So it doesn't really feel genre specific to me. The themes that we are dealing with are universal themes, and you can pull from any genre of movie to find support for it.
I just find, and I just wonder where this comes from for you, that Tom is kind of always warring with this sort of sense of his awareness of his morality in the world that has no morality.
Well, at the very end of this series, whenever that comes, I would very much like it to be Tom sits in his caneback chair at the new Continental Congress and drafts the next Constitution and the next Bill of Rights for America or the world. And part of the formation of that is asking those questions. What do we retain from the last existence that's important? And what do we discard as being unimportant or even counterproductive? And that battle of how to retain your morality in an immoral world is a very big part of that. if you lose the things that make you intrinsically human in the fight to save humanity, what have you really won in the end? And yet you have to adopt a different mindset, a much more brutal mindset, in order to be effective in winning the war in the first place. So that conflict of knowing you have to do some really bad things in order to win a good outcome and not sure whether you're going to be a good person when you arrive at that good outcome is a really poignant thing to play with when you're writing drama.
Because I feel like this season is really, as you sort of use that term, teeing up for that. I mean, just sort of seeing him being aware of having to become this thing that he's beheld, to, so to speak, watching Dan. Even just sort of watching that last season where you kind of see this sort of thing where there was this kind of tribal elder thing that Dan sort of had, that he surrenders to Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still some tensions that linger there too.
And the way that Tom has changed his approach to fatherhood. Initially, it was, I need to keep my children sheltered and protected and safe. And then that changed somewhere to, I need to train my children and arm them.
Yeah, I could never see Tom hugging his kids ever again in this, you know?
It's a different type of hug. It's not a sensitive hug. It's the comrade at arm hug. Yeah, he's training soldiers, not raising sons anymore, in the hope that their children can be raised as sons and not soldiers.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, though. I really am feeling in this season that sort of his awareness of that loss of the guy he was when the show started. And that strikes me as being an emotionally exhausting note to have to play.
Well, there are many exhausting things about having to play this character, as we touched on before the interview started. I'm 43 years old, and I would put a lot of wear and tear on my body over the course of the shooting season, and I'm finding, paradoxically, it takes longer and longer to recover and the more stuff they throw at me. Yeah, this is not an easy show to produce. It's not an easy show to pull off. And it really is one that requires the attention and the talent of every department. I mean, this is a perfect example of the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. The scripts are good and the cast is solid and the directors are good. And then you watch the rough cuts and you think, oh man, how are we going to pull this off? And then you see them lay in some special effects, and then you see them lay in the music, and then you tighten up the edit a little bit, and suddenly these things turn into something you couldn't imagine at the outset. I don't have the imagination to see what the finished product is going to be when we start, and I'm watching these episodes on the air almost for the first time. I mean, I know the story, but the way that they come together is so different than what you feel like you're executing on the set.
It's interesting you brought John Ford as somebody who really identified character as the way somebody behaved. Characters live through action. That's how we know who people are. And Tom has really become that guy. That's got to be part of the fun of it, but also part of the horror of it, too, of trying to find ways to do that and bring new changes on it.
Yeah, that's the fun part. If we were going to arc this thing over 20 years, I think I would be, you know, lost. But I see the ending, and I know how to get there from where we are right now, at least emotionally for the character. It feels like we've paced it out nicely. You know, John Carter's arc from season 1 to season 15 was nothing that you could imagine, you know, when you started in season 1. And yet you look back and you think, okay, yeah, here's a really rich kid who felt like, because he was born into privilege, he'd never really been tested as a man. And in order to feel deserving of his inheritance, he needed to have the validation of people he considered to be real. And so he puts himself in this inner city hospital, and he puts himself in continually in harm's way, and he kept pushing that envelope as he went and did an international triage medicine and so forth. And then eventually, by season 15, he had lived a life, and he had been injured, and he'd recovered from a drug addiction, and he'd fallen in love, and he'd lost a baby, and he'd, you know, had professional victories and a lot of professional losses. But at the end of it, when he steps up and assumes the mantle of chief residency, it feels very, very earned. And that's what you hope for, at, you know, in any time you play a character, is that when you look back, ah, yeah, you see that you built the foundation of the house brick by brick, and it all makes perfect sense.
My guest must be exhausted. We'll take a break. He's Noah Wiley. He's starring in Falling Skies on TNT. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
I'm Jenny Radelet, producer of The Treatment. If you like our show, you might also like The Business, KCRW's show about the business of show business, hosted by Kim Masters of The Hollywood Reporter. Find it on iTunes or on KCRW's smartphone apps.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest, Noah Wiley, had a chance to take a deep breath during the break. We're talking about a number of things, including Falling Skies. But what I like so much about watching you do other things, like I just remember that terrific gleam you had in your eye in Enough. And some of your work, Henry Jekyll, you play these characters with a kind of a mischievous streak, and you don't really get to do that so often in lead roles. And I just wonder if that's part of the entry you get in doing those
totally.
Things.
Totally. Well, variety is the spice of life, as they say. And you don't get to use sarcasm or cynicism or malevolence when you're wearing the white hat. So every once in a while, it's fun to put on the black hat and play the bad guy, if only to mix it up a little bit.
But I just wonder, too, because so much of what you do as an actor is really physical. And I wonder if that's how you train, because these characters we've talked about all have very different types of physicality and even move in different ways. And we can see the confidence now, the physical confidence in Tom's compared to the first season. And that sort of jaunty spring in the step that Carter had at the beginning of ER is just kind of gone by the end of the run. And Flynn in the librarian is just this guy who's constantly sort of like sitting upright, like he's seeing things for the first time. And I wonder where these sort of physical aspects
I would love come. To say that they're all premeditated choices.
You can say that.
The premeditated choice comes from going after characters that scare me for some reason. And a lot of times I get scared by the physicality of a character.
Yeah.
And when I look at the character, well, John Carter is a perfect example. I was so young when I started that character that I know why I got that role. I got that role because I was scared. I got that role because I was nervous and physically awkward in front of a camera on a set in a group of actors who I really considered to be better than me. And that sense of inadequacy, that sense of uncomfortableness that I had in life, the character had also in life. So it was a synchronistic matching to put me in that part at that time in my life. Worked out very well, because as the character matured and became more experienced, so did I. And by the end of that 15 years, I felt perfectly entitled to walk on that set on stage 11 at the Warner Brothers lot in Burbank, California. In fact, I felt like it was my second home, as did he. And then the next challenge when I finished that show was, what haven't I done? Well, I haven't fronted an ensemble, and I haven't really done anything action-oriented. I've never really carried a machine gun or run around and done anything physical. I don't know that anybody would even really believe it if I did. And the idea that I was being offered an opportunity to do that and I didn't think I could do it, I thought was significant. And again, the character is an academic who doesn't think he can do it. And so the learning curve for the character and the learning curve for the actor were the same. As Tom has gotten more proficient using a machine gun and leading men, I've gotten a lot more comfortable doing stunts and leading an ensemble. So it fits really nicely.
But just watching The Librarian, I just almost think about Cary Grant and the George Stevens comedy, you know, that, or Howard Hawks, that kind of weird sort of awkward stiffness. And also
I'll tell you exactly who I steal from for Flynn. Don Knotts, early Don Knotts.
Is that where all those takes come from?
A lot of them are Don Knotts. You know, any good comedian who used displaced confidence as their crutch is who I look to, because there's nothing funnier to me than a guy who knows it all and then walks into the door. The guy who sets himself up for his own punchline, I think, is the funniest kind of comedy, and that's Flynn. He's a big puppy dog. And then when he puts on the airs of erudition and then, you know, has the chair slip out from underneath him, it's funny. It's also a wonderful antidote to either doing the drama of ER or the drama of Falling Skies, playing a character that is light and funny and going to work and doing pratfalls and spit takes. It's good medicine.
I guess packs way too much, I think, modesty into what he does is Noah Wiley. We're talking about a number of things. He's currently starring in Falling Skies on TNT. But this idea of these guys who, I guess this thing that links so many of them, these guys who live in their heads to some extent and have to be pried out of that.
You know, my therapist gave me that exact advice yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, he told me that I should start thinking in terms of nonverbal communication, which is why I'm doing this radio interview.
That's why everybody comes here. But that's curious to me, because that's the thing these three guys kind of all have in common to some extent.
Yeah, the big brain guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sort of have an idea of how the world should work.
And ultimately realize that their big brains and their big ideas are a limitation to them in being successful more than they are a help. They're initially a help, but they each have to overcome their own intellect and find other aspects of their characters in order to be successful. And again, as my acting is catharsis, I'm trying to do the same thing.
But you mentioned having Don Knotts as kind of an avatar for Flynn. What do you use for Tom?
Tom, I went with Thomas Jefferson as sort of a thinker. Let me think. What did I use for Tom? Well, he's, like I said, he's reinvented himself a couple times over the last 4 years.
Well, each season of the show feels like it's been different from the one that's come before it.
Well, that's partly a byproduct of having a new showrunner every year and a new writing staff. Very atypical situation in television to be on your fifth showrunner in 4 seasons. But Falling Skies, I've described as a show with many fathers and one godfather in Steven Spielberg.
But it's a show that seems like, not doesn't seem, it goes through so much story that I almost see why you have to replenish the writing.
We had a 3-year Bible when we shot the pilot that we thought, okay, well, we know where we're going to be for 3 full seasons, after which we don't know quite what we're going to do. And we used all of that in the half of the first season. So we left ourselves pretty high and dry. And then we would do this unfortunate thing where we would write ourselves into a cliffhanger ending at the end of a season, not knowing how to get out of it when we came back to work, if we were going to come back to work the following fall. So we've managed to put large obstacles in our way each and every year. But the storytelling has mutated away from what the show was originally. Originally, it was about a guy trying to keep his family alive in the context of this invasion. And now it's taken a lot more of a science fiction turn. You know, the storylines are kind of out there. I was reticent to go out on that far on some of these science fiction strings, but the audience really seems to enjoy it. So I don't know that my taste is popular taste when it comes to this show, and I don't know that I know what the most poignant themes are anymore. I'm a bit more reactive than I used to be.
That's funny you say it, because in the last season especially, but even beginning of the second season, so much of the show is about sort of being overtaken by the astronaut. I mean psychologically. I mean, the physical threat was not nearly as prevalent as the idea of this idea of submission to an opposing force. I thought that was something that you were kind of warm to, that idea, that the idea of losing yourself.
Totally. Thematically, absolutely. In terms of the character's maturation development, I've been comfortable each and every step of the way. It was more the jump of going from a former history professor, Preston, to being a de facto military leader. And then suddenly, in season 3, I was the president of the new United States. 2 of my children were alien hybrids. It got out there really, really quickly. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, we're no longer a show that you can say, well, this is a fairly realistic as if. This is now a show that's got a lot of complexity. It's science fiction. It's out there. It's not grounded in necessarily truth. So you have to find other things that help anchor it in order to justify going out there on those strings. At least that was my thinking. But in watching this season, you know, it's working for me. I wasn't sure that I wanted to see Matt go into a schoolroom and be indoctrinated.
And Matt being your youngest son.
Matt being my youngest son in a sort of Cambodian communistic indoctrination process. I thought that seemed a little out there. But it works. It works, oddly enough. And I wasn't sure that I was going to buy my daughter, who's rapidly aging at this exponential rate, suddenly becoming almost like a religious figure to her followers because of the power she exhibits. I thought that sounded kind of out there. And I also know where we're going with the end of the season, so I know how far out there we are eventually going to go. All of which made me very nervous, but seems to be working, so.
Well, my guest, whose kids are alien bait on Falling Skies, is Noah Wiley. It's the treatment. But that seems to be a way to sort of keep the character grounded to some extent, that there's this thing he really can't do. He can't protect his kids from this. I mean, even forget physically, he can't protect them emotionally from that.
Well, certainly now what they're up against now, it's all in or nothing. I mean, the choice has never been more starkly made. You either give everything to the cause or humanity as we know it is done. So with their back up against the wall, they're willing to do just about anything.
The idea, though, of finding a way to not play fear, but to have that be so constant.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I've always said the hardest thing about this show is a 5-shot when they're looking at an alien. You put 5 characters in the frame who are looking at an alien that's not there, that's actually just a tennis ball on the end of a stick, and tell them all to play
fear. Is it literally that, the tennis ball?
It's a tennis ball on the end of a stick,
okay.
Yeah. And I remember the first time we had to do it, like, I played terrified. I was sweating and my heart was beating, and I suddenly I looked down the row of guys and nobody else was playing as scared as I was. And I went, wait, hang on a second. I'm supposed to be the leader here. So if you make me look like I'm the most terrified, I'm going to look like a pansy. Come on. Everybody's got to play this.
And you're so really doing down nuts there.
We totally, the incredible Mr. Lippitt came out. So we had this big meeting about what is fear? How do you depict fear? And how do you make it character specific and yet instantly recognizable? And the methodology we came up with was the alien represents your worst fear about yourself being exposed, whether it's your cowardice or whether it's your whatever it is. And make it specific to who you are as a character. But whenever you see that alien, it's like seeing a mirror holding your worst trait back at yourself, and everybody can see it now. So then suddenly that five shot becomes very interesting because you don't have five people doing a Fay Wray impression looking at King Kong. You have five different people reacting very, very differently but organically to a fear that is palpable to them. That's how you get past it. But it's tricky.
But certainly playing a character in that show, like you said, where you've like gone through showrunners and a number of them, you've got to be able to keep your own counsel at some point. I mean, you know the character better than these people who are coming in and out.
That's very true, and I use that argument a lot when I'm fighting with writers. But the truth is, you know, sometimes you can get too close to it and lose your objectivity. And
when does that happen for you? Is an example you can think of?
Well, the biggest example so far in my career was John Wells, who was the executive producer and showrunner on ER, came to me and told me that he wanted John Carter to develop a drug addiction. And I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's not in this character's makeup. Why would that happen? That doesn't make any sense. And he said, well, this is how we're going to get into it. You're going to get stabbed. You're going to get hurt. A psychotic patient is going to attack you. And in your recovery, you begin to self-medicate. You know, you want to get back to work. You're still in a lot of pain. Pain medication is available to you. You begin to take it. And then you become sort of addicted to it. It gets out of control. And it gets to the point where you can't control it any longer. And it begins to affect your decision-making process. And the reason I want it to be your character, Noah, is because your character is the everyman. And the face of drug addiction is the everyman face. It could be anybody. It isn't, you know, a stereotype. It's all of us are susceptible. And I think it'll have the most poignancy if it comes from you. And when he said that to me, my understanding of the character was expanded because he was absolutely right. I didn't know what the limitations of my character's behavior were because he hadn't lived through enough life experience to inform how that can change over the course of one's life.
And you were being protective of the character rather than sort of...
Sure. I mean, not to be too candid, but when I was married to my kid's mother, I never thought I was going to get divorced. In fact, I was positive. I'm not the kind of man that would ever end a relationship, end a marriage. I was raised in two different houses and I didn't enjoy it. I would never do that to my kids. Life is what it is. You know, my ex-wife and I ended up splitting up. Suddenly you find yourself having to go, okay, so what were those stories I told myself about myself that are no longer true? And what are the new stories that I need to start telling myself about the man that I am? And that's true with any character.
Wow, now what a great note to end on. We're out of time. You have to come back.
Anytime, man.
My guest is Noah Wyle. He's keeping it together, just barely. It's Tom Mason on Falling Skies on TNT. It's the fourth season. Recording engineer who also mixes the show is Melissa Morton. Edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.